This is The Coaching Inn, a podcast from 3D Coaching.
Hello, I'm Claire Pedrick, and welcome to this week's Coaching Inn, where I'm in conversation with my friend Becky Hall, who's just got a book out today. So, Becky, tell us all about you and your book.
Hi, Claire, and hello, everybody. So I'm Becky Hall. I'm a coach, and I've been a coach and facilitator for 20 odd years now. And I live and work in Oxford. And like everyone else in the country for the last 18 months, that's where I have been, which has been a great change for me, actually, because I was used to traveling much more. I work a lot with coaches and people I work with one-to-one. I work with about 20 people one-to-one. And I also work with a few teams to accompany them. And that's the basis of my work. I love it.
Fantastic. And we'll find out more about your book as we go. And you've also brought your ukulele.
I have brought my ukulele because the story being, I'll tell the story, Claire. When Claire and I, we met, didn't we, on a training program for systemic coaches. And we had a residential in Spain. And I decided that one of the things that I needed to take in my hand luggage was a ukulele. So I ended up playing it a little bit. So suffice to say, I never normally play in coaching sessions with people I'm working with, but we thought it'd be fun for me to bring it along today.
Yeah, and I'm sure we can work out a way of doing something somewhere. It's amazing.
Yeah, you never know. Indeed.
So what's been the biggest learning about working from home then?
Gosh, that's a great question. The biggest learning has been how fruitful one-to-one conversations are online. That was a learning for me, actually, because I have always, up until that point, had the view that I need to be in the room with somebody to be able to pick up all the physical cues and to get the sort of what I call whole body listening experience. And whilst I think that that's still the case, sometimes one-to-one, face-to-face work, you can pick up energy a little bit more immediately. What I've learned is that you can do that really effectively on Zoom or on whatever online platform you use. And that was a revelation to me. And it's been a gift.
Yeah.
It's been a gift of lockdown.
Yeah. And what a different life we've all had.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah. Amazing. So your book's called The Art of Enough. So how long's it been brewing?
Oh, that's a great question. It has been brewing for 7 years, Claire.
So oh, wow.
I had this idea, 7 years ago. And it was for a long time, it's been the book I'm going to write. And I've been sporadically blogging and collating stories and thoughts and ideas about it. And then at the beginning of last year, at the beginning of 2020, before I'd even heard of COVID or anything like that, I said to myself, I'm either going to write this book or I am going to stop talking about it. I am no longer going to say I am going to write a book. I am going to write the thing or I'm going to move on. So I began to craft it and to begin to shape it and work out how and when I was going to write it and what the content would be. And that was so fortuitous because it meant that when lockdown happened in whenever it was March last year, I wasn't suddenly thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to write my book and I need to use this time. I was already on the path to thinking, wow, this is a beautiful moment of synchronicity. Despite all the upheaval and pain for a lot of people lockdown was, for me, it gave me quite a lot of extra space because I wasn't traveling so much. And it really meant that I could put my head down and get on with the writing.
Wow. Wow. And here it is.
Here it is, The Art of Enough.
The fruit of your labour. Mm. I love the word enough, and I often add it when somebody's said something to me in a one-to-one conversation because it bothers me when people go, it needs to be good, it needs to be relaxing, it needs to be right, it needs to be income generating, it needs to be whatever. And that aspirational thing, we often go to the kind of peak of that, don't we? And I just love your description of enough is enough, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a real reclaiming that is extremely useful, because so much of our culture is sort of driven by this sense of scarcity, that we somehow don't have what we need, or that we're not good enough, or that we're, you know, we're not up to the task, or we're imposters in a role. And then what that drives us to do is sort of overcompensate with sort of excess, like too much work, or too the inability to create boundaries, or this sense that it's always craving and always striving. And what enough gives us is the opportunity to just focus on the present moment and thriving. Actually, it sort of says, actually, boundaries and limits are done well and safely are enabling. They're containers from which we can grow. And you talk about that in your book too, Claire. And it's that sort of plant pot image. You know, it was interesting when I was writing the book, I had some feedback from people saying, well, enough isn't enough. It's you're not being aspirational. I don't like this idea of limit. My response to that is actually it is the limits that enable. It's the other way around, that from a place of enough, we can springboard into the height of our ambition, which is to flourish and grow and do all the incredible things that we might want to do.
Yeah, boundaries. Mm. Brené Brown says, doesn't she, that the most compassionate people have the best boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I think often we run away from boundaries for exactly the reason that you're saying, that it feels limiting.
Yeah, absolutely. Or that we don't give ourselves permission to put them in place. And it's interesting, because when I first had the idea of writing this book, I thought I was going to write a book for leaders, because I typically... the people I work with are in management or senior leadership positions. But actually, when I began to talk to people about it, it's an issue for everyone. So whether you're a 23-year-old managing your social media, or whether you're a chief exec or leading some institution, it's still just as important for you to be able to say, actually, do you know what? After 9 o'clock, I'm just going to stop. Or 7 o'clock, or whatever it is, whatever the limit is, to say it's okay to not always be available and always responsive. In fact, it's better when we're not, because it gives a sense of value and clarity for ourselves and for others.
I think you need to be doing a little flurry next summer before people stop for the summer, or don't.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, absolutely. And, you know, I've got a quote, a phrase in my book that I say, you know, no one is ever going to tell you to not to send a tweet at midnight, or not to look at your emails when you're on holiday, or not to look at your emails in the middle of the night. It's on you. And I think that boundaries have become so individualized that we all need to really, really think about them and work on them.
Mm. And freelance paranoia, which mm-hmm. many of our listeners may have, that mm-hmm. actually goes, I have to say yes to everything because I don't know if any more is going to come in,
yeah,
is a real yeah. thing.
It's a real thing. And, you know, Claire, I've been pretty much a freelance coach for the whole of my working life, well, for the last 20 years. So, and before then I was an actor, and that was equally freelance. So, and, you know, one of the really big challenging learnings for me in writing this book and thinking about it was, what does enough mean for a freelancer? And I was really lucky a few years ago to meet Charles Handy, who's the writer Charles Handy, and he was delightfully invited me to come talk to him about book writing. And he was talking about it, and he told me that he and his wife at the beginning of each year decide how much they want to earn. Now, accepting that that is a position of privilege, and of course not everybody is in that position, but he was, and some of us as coaches can be, that as long as you've got your minimum, he always sets himself a maximum, and after that the bookings reach the maximum, he stops taking bookings for that year. And he says, and you know, wonderful things happen with the rest of my time. And you, of course, you hate choices. But that for me was a scales dropping from my eyes moment, because I had never thought of it in that way. I've always thought, well, I'll work really hard. And if I have a bumper year, that's great. I can have a reserve and et cetera, et cetera.
Because I've got freelance paranoia about next year.
Because I've got, exactly. And that is exactly the point of enough. It's like going, actually, do you know what? I need to earn this much. That's enough. And then what else can happen? And so therefore it becomes a very creative, wonderful process, which is where the art of enough comes into it, because you can flourish in new and different ways. And who knows where that would lead you.
And Charles Hand has written a line on the front of your book, I notice. Well done, Becky. Yeah.
Well, bless him. He very kindly, he's a generous man, and he offered to endorse it. So
that's so kind, isn't it? That reminds me of that John Wesley quote that said, if I need this much to live on, that's how much I need to earn. It's the same concept, isn't it?
It really is. And it seems so glaringly obvious, and yet it can feel countercultural in our world that we live in now. I really think so, because there's this constant narrative that we have to have more. And it sort of stops us being able to relax with the present and what is and what we have. And so you don't sort of experience the fullness of it or allow yourself to appreciate it. I think that's I think we're cutting ourselves short, actually.
And I'm just thinking about the concept of enough emails. A friend of mine on Facebook, who's a chief exec, was going on holiday, and she said, I have decided I'm not going to check my emails on holiday. And then she checked in after week one and said, I haven't yet. And she did it. Somebody offered to give a large donation to her charity if she could do it. And she did it.
Well done, her.
But there's something, isn't there, about not only freelance paranoia that says work is scarce, I have to do it, you know, if I can over earn this year, then that will keep me through the fallow years. I think there's also something about I must be on my emails all the time or I will miss things.
Absolutely. And that is it's a mindset of scarcity. It's a mindset that of lack, actually. And I think that the mindset of enough really is about honing our ability to trust in the abundance of life and the cyclical nature of resource. And that, yes, you know, yes, there'll be ebbs and flows of things, but if and when we can learn to trust the abundance of things, it allows a different driver to our work. It allows us to be able to focus on different things, simply. I think there's huge benefit to it, and it takes fear and anxiety out of the equation. Now, as I'm saying these things, they're easy to say and hard to do. So this is virtually daily practice for me. You know, it's all the things, and there are loads of practices in my book, because I think it's a practical way of living, but and it's a choice about saying, well, I want to live in this way, so therefore I have to help myself by resetting my mindset, meditating or whatever I do with that, sitting with that and checking myself when I find myself falling into the sort of fear-based scarcity mindset, which is so easy to get into, because it's our culture. I mean, I think our culture is a culture of scarcity. And I think it's systemic. I think we need to learn how to live with enough. Well, we clearly need to learn how to live with enough globally, because the planet is burning, you know.
Yeah. Yes. And our definition of enough can get very skewed, can't it?
Indeed. Yeah. And, you know, enough can mean lots of things. It can mean stop, you know, that's enough, or it can mean have I got enough, or, you know, there's all of that. And the enough, one of the definitions of enough that I really found useful was Donald Winnicott, who's a psychologist in the 1960s, he did all the work on parenting. He talked about good enough mothering. And it's an interesting one, because when I first became a mother myself, I was like, well, I don't want to be good enough. I want to be amazing. I want to be an amazing mom. But what he's talking about is in the moment of connection with a mother with their child is that you have to be able to sort of sense what the child needs and not give them too little and not give them too much, because both of those have longer term impacts. So it's about being very, very present in and nuanced to the need of the child in the moment. And I kind of think if we give ourselves that gift of being able to know what our needs are in the moment, and that enough is the thing that provides flourishing or growth.
Mm. Wow. There's so many different directions we could go in.
I'm not there.
How long have you got?
I know, Claire. When you said it was half an hour, I thought, well, gosh, you know, we can always carry on another time.
Yeah, mm. Yes. I'm really curious. What was the biggest insight for you as you wrote your book?
That's a really interesting question, because so the things I knew were the things about scarcity and imposter syndrome and the things about managing overwhelm. In lots of ways, they came from my work. So lots of the stories in the field work are from people I've worked with and my own experience. So I interweave that. I think that the biggest insight, or the biggest, and I also say it's also my biggest hope, is how we can connect our inner state and what we do day by day to the challenges that we face as a planet. So this sort of connection between our lived experience as people living our lives and the sort of big systemic challenges of our age, and I'm talking pretty specifically about climate change. And I know loads of coaches who are really working in this space. And how do we stop that being sort of generic abstractions which are over there for other people to solve? And how do we link that to our own way of living and approaching our lives, which is when it becomes meaningful and when we can begin to have impact? So I think that my insight was that we can and must connect those two things. And it's also my hope too, because I hope that we are able to do that in a way that means that we can give ourselves more choices. And sometimes these things can feel so big, and you know, that turning the tanker just feels like a task that is bigger than us. I think that's where I was at too.
Yeah, and I love the way you're connecting all the different parts of life. That just felt really kind of whole and useful and, yeah, fantastic. So enough permission, enough mindset, enough resource, enough boundaries, enough presence, you know, enough connection. A beautiful way of, you know, Senge says, doesn't he, everything's in connection.
Yeah. And connection's my last chapter. And in a way, it could have been the first chapter. I mean, that I've created a model that makes it look linear, but of course nothing is linear. It's all sort of more higgledy-piggledy than that. But actually, connection is both the biggest systemic challenge we have, how we can connect with nature and the planet, and it's also the most easy one to achieve daily, because we can all look at a tree or smell a rose and connect with nature in a very, very visceral whole sense. And it's about connecting to our deepest longings, and it's about connecting to each other and us as coaches, as we walk alongside the people we work with, how we connect that with them to connect to their purpose. And, you know, that you could go on, but it's, of course, the core to so much.
Yeah, and the climate change thing is about connecting to future generations, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I quote a book by Ronan Krasmerik called The Good Ancestor, How We Can All Be Good Ancestors.
Oh, and wow.
It's a wonderful, wonderful book, which I recommend. all about that, how we can transfer our thinking into sort of long-term thinking and cathedral thinking. And there's a wonderful Apache saying that he talks about, which I'll probably misremember the exact details, but he says it's something along the lines of, we don't inherit this world from our ancestors, we borrow it from our children. And I love that perspective where you go, okay, well, you know, what are we leaving? How are we being good ancestors? How are we going to change the course of things so that our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, even if we don't have children ourselves, collectively, generationally, will be able to flourish and thrive too?
Wow. That's so interesting, isn't it? Because you and I met on a course about systems in Spain. And a lot of the work we did was about our peacock's tail, the people who are behind us. And we dug deeply into learning about that, didn't we? And we didn't touch much on those in front of us.
No, it's really true. And what I learned from that systemic work was that that it's all in service of restoring the flow of life and love. So where we can get stuck in our is often moments where we're sort of being pulled back towards an entanglement that we may have experienced, or one of our ancestors may have experienced, a sort of historic trauma or something that that limits our belief, to use more other coaching language too. But there's not much focus on the future. And of course, the sort of indigenous peoples would always say you make decisions in honouring the seven generations behind you, but in service of the seven generations ahead of you. And I think it's something that we've lost sight of as a culture, as a societies, those of us who live in the global north or in the west, those sorts of cultures, I think are really... really short-term gain, and forgetting that sort of long-term legacy building, really.
Yeah, so legacy building, ancestors and descendants, and that thing about flow. I was listening to an audiobook yesterday called Ambiguous Loss.
Oh, okay, that sounds great.
Which was recommended to me by somebody who I supervise. It's really interesting, but one of the things that she's talking about, as I'm talking to you, I would define it as flow. Mm. And she was saying that if you think that loss is the end, then loss becomes enormous. But actually, when she's interviewed people from tribes in South America, where their philosophy is of flow, loss is a natural part of the flow of living and dying.
And
descendants come and ancestors go, and this is a very normal thing, and the flow comes back in that context.
It does require a sort of big picture view, doesn't it? That we have this sort of, I mean, different people have different words for it, but our focus on ourselves, our ego selves, and our focus on whatever you call it, different people might call it soul, some people might call it that sort of purposeful, facilitating life, the onward flow of life, which is of course where nature can teach us everything, because that's until people started threatening it, the circles of life were very, very much based on that sort of cyclical approach to life, facilitating life and perpetuating. I like the sound of that book. That podcast. That sounds wonderful.
I'll put a link in the program notes.
Yeah.
And to your good ancestor.
Yes.
Great. So what's the biggest message you want people to hear?
Oh, great question. I want people to hear that living with enough is what will enable us individually, collectively, and societally to flourish. I think that limits and boundaries and a focus on what's here and what the challenges we face as they are really is what will enable us to get out of the challenge we face, as big climate change challenges, but also will enable us to live really rich and full, wonderful lives, that we can lose our addiction to more is better and start going, we can do this individually as much as societally.
Fabulous. Thank you. I think you should play us out when we finish. But before that, how do people get hold of your book, The Art of Enough?
Oh,
and how do they contact you?
Great. Okay. So it is available from all booksellers. So Amazon, if you choose not to use Amazon, your local independent bookshop will be able to order it for you at Waterstones. It's on all the sites. There's a Kindle version too. If people want to contact me, you can go via theartofenough.co.uk. We'll connect to my website and then you can find me there. Or I'm on all the socials, LinkedIn, Becky Hall, Instagram and Facebook, Becky Hall Art of Enough. So yeah, contact me. And I'm really, really keen for this to be a conversation with people and to become a thing that we share ideas about how we can do this, because I'm not suggesting that this is easy, but I am suggesting that it's worth it.
So how about we have The Art of Enough as our next book group?
Wonderful.
Would you be willing to come in as a guest sometimes?
Yes, absolutely. I really, really would. I would love to do that. One of the lovely things that happened when I opened the box of books, you probably had this, Claire, when you opened yours, and you suddenly see the fruits of your labour that you've worked so hard on, and it's suddenly a book, and you think, gosh, this is lovely. And then what happened to me was I suddenly had this realisation that this wasn't mine anymore. This now belongs to the reader. It belongs to everybody. And so I would love to join conversations about it.
Fantastic. We'll have you back. We'll have drinks at the Coaching Inn. And
lovely.
So anyone who wants to join us for drinks at the Coaching Inn, watch out on our social media, because we'll tell you when that is. We'll set up a date with Becky and we can listen and have another conversation live, and you can ask Becky your questions. And then we'll do what we did with Simplifying Coaching. We'll look at a chapter at a time and then Becky can respond to your questions.
Wonderful. I'd love that.
That would be amazing. You. Sorry, I didn't. I only just thought of that. I hope you didn't feel I dropped you in it there.
Not at all. I'm really happy to talk about this stuff. It's really important for me.
I think the thing for me that was the most shocking was when I saw a conversation on LinkedIn between two other people that I didn't know about the book. And only because somebody else commented on it did I ever see it in my feed. And that was when I knew it had its life.
Yeah. But it's a funny thing, writing, isn't it? Because it feels so, well, it is by necessity so sort of inward also. And then you begin to share it with beta readers and people in your book team or whatever. But then it absolutely has a life of its own. And then it's like children, I suppose. They grow up and then they have their own lives.
So you're being a good ancestor.
I hope so. Well, I do my best.
Well, thank you, Becky. And do play us out. Have you got a tune for us?
Well, yeah, I have. The tune I have got, I mentioned it in my book. One of the things that I do in my with my extra time is play in a little group, a little band. And that's one of the songs we sing is All of Me. And I think it's about including the whole of life, that we can't, warts and all. It's important to include our shadow, our good bits and our bad bits. So this is just, I'll just play you a little tiny bit of All
great.
Of Me. I'm, I'm not really a professional musician, so you know, forgive any bum notes.
It's enough, right?
yeah.
That was great.
You're welcome.
So people can buy your book from right now.
Yeah, they absolutely can.
The Art of Enough. And I'm Claire Pedrick, and I've been in conversation with Becky Hall. Thank you, Becky. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, please share the podcast with a friend who might also be interested. And if you'd like to become one of our regulars at The Coaching Inn, you can subscribe at Podbean or on iTunes. We look forward to meeting you on the next podcast.
You've been listening to The Coaching Inn. Find out more about us at www.3dcoaching.com.